Welcome into Open Gym here on Texas Sports Unfiltered. Myself, Patrick Davis, alongside Matt Gladson of Texas Longhorns on our side. Of course, you, the third member of Open Gym. Text lines open, 512-222-9328. And over there on the chat, Facebook, Twitch, X, and on YouTube. Matt, it is a Tuesday afternoon. CB, you are correct. The mood is going to be very empty. I was looking at secondhand tickets. I was looking on some other sites to see where they're at. Lots and lots of tickets under $10. Like, not a few. The cheapest I saw was $3 for a ticket for tonight's game. So if you want to go and take the family, I'm sure you could go for a very affordable rate. As long as the kids don't mind walking in the, or you don't mind walking in the cold, downtown parking is free after 6, I believe. So you find yourself a spot down there on the street somewhere, take a little jog, take a little walk over the mood, you know, eat before you go. You can have a nice affordable night and go watch these Texas Longhorns once this season for really cheap. If you want to do that, just saying, you can do it cheap, Matt. This is, I try and find your affordable ways to enjoy sports harder and harder in 2025 to enjoy sports for affordable. Any Miami fans would tell you that trying to get to College Station.
Yeah, $530,933 each for the players winning the NBA Cup. That's wild.
Yeah, they get an extra. It's a big bonus for some of these guys. It's a huge bonus.
Sorry, I'm a little off track. But yeah, CB, you're right. The highest rated recruit for Colorado is from Texas. So Warren Sapp is our honorary meathead of the day. The funny thing is about that Warren Sapp comment, yeah, they offered that kid that he was making the comment about Texas being fake football.
Yeah.
The day before he made that tweet, he got an offer from Colorado.
No, it was that comment, Matt, felt like something a guy would say, it felt like a jab to a friend, but it was just very misplaced. You know, like if Warren Sapp played in the NFL with a Texas man, and he was like, oh, this is a Texas guy played in Texas high school football. So we always talk about which is better. And I just throw this little jab that he will get because we've had this whole argument before. That's what that felt like. But you're like, you can't just throw that out to everywhere because It feels like you have to have so much more of a statement on that than what you did, or else it doesn't make any sense. It was a dumb thing to put on Twitter. I'm going to go out and say that I think it was a mistake that he was trying to say it to somebody, and he thought it was funny. I don't think he was a malicious as he thought it was funny, and it did not land. That's what I'll go with that as my best hope for him.
The tweet has since been deleted.
Yeah, because it went over like a lead balloon. Over well at all. Was not good at all, Matt. Matt, I also want to ask you this. Because today has been really bad. I asked my friend about it, but it's gotten worse over the holidays. How many text or phone calls do you get a day? Saying that you've been approved for funding.
Oh God, 10.
It is absurd right now, and I don't know what it is. I'm like, I don't run a business. I don't have any need for business funding. I'm glad you're willing to give me $750,000 for a business I don't own. But something tells me this is not real. Something tells me might be a scam that I'm getting 7 of these a day at minimum and just constantly blocking phone numbers nonstop. My blocked phone numbers must be in the hundreds now.
Yeah. And they just change one digit and do the thing all over again with the robot.
It is insane right now. Crazy. It is, yeah. Not a fan of it. Not a fan of it. Wanted to get into some good stuff today. We'll get into it. Talk a little bit about Texas versus Lemoyne. There's not a lot to talk about. They should be able to win this game heavily. But that one, we've got our overreactions coming up in hour two as well. Want to get into a little portal talk on a Tuesday afternoon as well. Thank you, Hair of the Dog. Good to know that I'm approved. A couple more names. Announced what they're doing in the future, or at least it has been reported that they've announced what they're doing in the future. So we'll get into all of that, Matt. But I want to start off the show with something I saw that I think was labeled and posted to get more rage bait than what the actual what was actually said. But I think it's an interesting comment.
You're talking about my Arch Manning PFF tweet?
No, not your Arch Manning PFF tweet. I know you're rage baiting everybody who thinks Arch Manning had a terrible season because they watched him in two games. And in those two games, yeah. Well, I watched the first six passes in the Ohio State game, and they weren't good. So clearly, he didn't get better. They're going for a rude awakening about Georgia. Well, I watched Georgia early in the season, and they weren't that good. So they must be bad now, still, right?
Mm-hmm.
A rude awakening. Yeah. But Joel Klatt was on a show this morning, and gave a very hot take about not just the playoffs, but also about the NCAA tournament. So I wanted to get your guys' opinion on this, and of course, Matt, your opinion on this. But here's the take from Joel Klatt this morning.
How important is it for Tulane or James Madison to be competitive this weekend? Is it sort of the future of an auto bid for the G5 at stake for them to look the part this weekend?
I don't think that it matters. It would help in the sentiment, you know, the public sentiment, but these things are going to be, it will be determined by finances and litigation. And the reason the Group of Five is included in this playoff is to avoid antitrust litigation. That's it, guys. Like, we're not looking for a Cinderella. Nobody cares in football about James Madison or you know, the equivalent of George Mason going. Didn't George Mason go to the Final Four or
they
something
did,
like
yes.
that? Nobody cares in football about that. We don't want Cinderellas. We want the best teams playing each other at the end. In fact, hot take. I mean, like, the hottest of all takes that I've ever had in my entire life. The NCAA basketball tournament is a joke. It's the dumbest tournament and the least fair tournament in all of sports. We go and we put teams at odd times on neutral sites in a one game affair. Like, that doesn't crown a true champion. We're not doing anything that tells us who's the best team over the course of the entire season. You know, like, if anything, the NCAA basketball tournament should act exactly like the old World Cup, which we should have groups. They should all get guaranteed three games, and they should be played at the higher seeds arena so that those seeds are rewarded for a quality game. And that way we don't just get to see, like, you know, Kentucky one and done against George Mason or something like that. Well, that's stupid. That's stupid. Again, hottest of all takes, but that would make the NCAA basketball tournament far better. Neutral site, one and duns? What are we doing?
Yeah, you know who loves that, though, is CBS. I mean, it's great for CBS.
I guess.
Well, it
sucks for the fans.
CBS paid billions of dollars for it. Yeah. No, I'm with
it's
you.
True.
It doesn't determine, you know, I think more often than not, when we get our football national champion, you're able to look back and say, yeah, it's probably the best team all season. Or,
yeah, and I think
close enough, I'm comfortable with it. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, I thought you know, the year Georgia missed a couple of years ago, I was like, when Michigan won,
yeah, maybe
I was like,
not.
Man,
yeah.
that was a tough one when Bama beat them in the SEC championship game. But that's a hot take. So back to the Group of Five. I think that in order to separate it out, the Group of Five will have to be incentivized somehow, and specifically from a financial perspective, to go play their own championship. I think that would be better for them anyways. But if that doesn't happen and they get cut out of the finances, they will sue and will wind up in court, and they'll be in the playoff moving forward.
So that was Joel Klatt this morning giving a long answer, but a good answer. One that I think I wanted to play the whole thing because it does explain a lot more than nobody likes Cinderellas.
Because
that's the thumbnail that everybody responds to without watching the clip. So I thought I'd play the whole thing so you get a little bit more context. A lot to address in that, Matt, but you know, your initial reaction there, Matt.
Well, first, I want to know just in one word or the other, do you think he's right or do you think he's wrong?
I think he's right about a lot of what he said.
Okay. That I'm not the only one here. I think he is 100% correct on all of it. And maybe that just is me being a little biased towards Joel Klatt, because I like him a lot, and I think he's really good at what he does. He explains things incredibly well. But he's right about the group of five thing. If you don't include them in some way, shape, or form, they're going to sue, because why else are they playing football if not to try to, you know, have somebody win a national championship? I mean, I get that's not what every team's goal is, but they have to have some sort of chance in this whole thing. They have to. Should two of them have a chance? Absolutely not. That's ridiculous. And in terms of the NCAA basketball tournament, I completely agree. I hate March Madness because there's way too many teams and most of the games are not good. And then it's just like the one or two good games in each round that make everybody think it's the best postseason in sports. And it's not. Like, I don't think that a number one seed, was it Virginia that lost to the 16 seed? I don't think that a number one Virginia seed should be
Purdue was the one who did a couple,
or was it Purdue should be knocked out of the NCAA tournament for good because they played one bad game. I think the World Cup structure would be awesome because I love the World Cup. I think it's great, and you have a little bit of leeway. And in that case, yeah, maybe you don't let as many teams in because there will be far too many games. But I completely agree with them. I think that would be awesome.
All right, so I'll go with, we'll start with the NCAA tournament first. So I agree in the sense of it's not the best way to crown a real national champion. It is a convoluted way to crown a national champion. Virginia lost one too. I know Purdue lost to the 16 seed a few years ago. But when you say, we look at it and say that, you know, nobody cares about the Cinderellas. People like to see a giant getting toppled. So they don't really necessarily care about the Cinderella, but they do like to watch a giant get toppled. Everybody enjoys it. It is a fun thing if that's not your giant. If you're rooting for the giant, then you hate it. But if you are not rooting for the giant, the underdog is normally a guy. Now, the question about a Cinderella versus an underdog are two different battles. So I think there is something more about underdogs stepping up and decent teams that get a chance and they shine at the right time. It's not the best way to do a national championship, but for a tournament, it is very fun because one of the biggest things in sports that makes sports really exciting is the what's at stake. Like, what happens if you lose? Not what happens if you win. So, like, the NBA Cup tonight is a perfect example. What happens if you win? You win a bunch of money. You get a poster. You get everything else. What happens if you lose? Absolutely nothing. It does not matter if you lose or win. But it matters if you win, but it doesn't matter if you lose. People don't care about what happens if you win as much. People care more about what happens if you lose. That is a thing that's a much bigger precursor. It's the same concept of why every news site gives thumbnails and rage bait, because it's easier to get people to hate and to fear than it is to love and to care. Those are two different emotions. It's way easier to make the other one. So when you watch sports, you want to make people watch sports where they go, they could lose everything on this free throw. That's just a bigger motivation for people to care about a game and get invested in a game with two teams they don't really care about and don't really have a stake in. So that's why the NCAA tournament can be great, is because everything is a one and done. That's why the tournament is great. As for it defending a national, deciding a national champion, I agree. It's not the best way to decide a national champion. And the World Cup way would be a much better way to decide a national champion. Agree 100% on that remark. But if we're just saying, who's going to tune in more to watch college basketball? 100% the tournament will always have better ratings than if you did a World Cup style, because look, once Texas is out, 95% of Texas fans are not going to watch the tournament anymore, or they're not going to watch a World Cup thing because they don't want to watch the six best teams in college basketball. It's not as fun anymore. I don't have a horse in the race. So that's why the tournament is what it is. Now for football, when we go back to football, Matt, football is big enough. Football is popular enough. You will watch football if your dog is not in the hunt. You will still watch. You will watch the Super Bowl every year, even though your team ain't in it. Cowboys fans have not watched a Super Bowl in 20 years. Cowboys fans watch it every year. So football does have a little bit more of a push that you can put in the best teams and have the best games. It's a longer game. It's a more deliberate game than basketball is, where one guy just gets hot in a basketball game and it skews everything. In a football game, that's a little bit harder. You have 11 guys all working together, and it becomes a more difficult path for one guy to just completely take over a game. It's happened, but it's a rarer sight than in basketball. So I think in football, you do want to see the best, most complete teams go out there, because when we see a James Madison, when we see a Tulane, even if their quarterback plays the best game of his life, even if they have a running back really go off, 50-50, they have a chance to win that game. Now, in basketball, your guy goes off for 60, pretty good shot you're winning that game. But one guy going off in football doesn't have the same effect. And so I do believe that it's silly to put these teams in there. The better games would draw if Notre Dame and Texas, or even if Vanderbilt, who is the underdog more, and I know Pavi is less liked a lot more now, but Vanderbilt would be the underdog. But even if you put a Texas in there, then the ratings are much better. More people are watching, more people are invested in the game because they do get to see these great matchups. And that's just what it is. And then his last point is 100% true. Why is a group of five in there? Because they will sue if they're not in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the way it is. I'm with you, Matt. I think that what we've talked about on the show plenty of times, that there should be a cutoff for the automatic qualifier. And I've even said it 20, which is not hard at all. That's 20. Because the argument that we've kept seeing, Matt, online is remember the Sugar Bowl? Oh, I remember it when Boise State won. I remember the upset. So we should try and have those upsets. We should try and have those. But if you go back and look at all the upsets, because people are posting the scores of the upsets, the team that was the other side of the upset was always ranked in the top 15. They weren't 32nd. They weren't 23rd with a two-loss Tulane or whatever, a one-loss team that didn't play anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, you're talking about teams that are really, really good, and they just happen to be a group of five team, which is a huge difference. And that guy should be in the playoff. That team should be in. But if you're saying that these two teams who don't really do it, both their coaches already left, there's not a real reason for it other than, well, they're going to sue and complain if we don't. They're going to be like Notre Dame and go beat their fist and go, this isn't fair. Of course it's not fair. That's how it works.
Yeah, I mean, look, I just looked it up. The Boise State team that beat Oklahoma was 13-0 and ranked number 9 in the country.
Yes.
That's barely an upset. It only feels like an upset because the name on the loss side was Oklahoma. That's it. So I'm in complete agreement. The cap thing is the way that I would go. You have to be ranked in the top 20. Regardless, even if you make that rule, I still feel like they'd find a way to sue because they were left out and they want to have as good of a chance as everybody else does. But where the College Football Playoff Committee is kind of painting themselves into a corner in that regard is everybody else has to play up to the same standard in the Power Four.
Yes.
It matters about your strength of schedule. It matters about your quality wins and, you know, up and down the list. If you get two losses, you're on the fringes of being out.
Yes.
Whereas none of these group of five teams have to go through the same rigorous schedule. None of them have to go through the same things on a week in, week out basis of playing five top 10 teams throughout the year and, you know, grinding it out through an SEC schedule. They get to play UTSA and Utah State and North Texas, who was good this year, but UCF, UCF is Big 12 now, but you get the point. USF, like all of these teams, they don't really have to play anybody at the same level. So they're held to a different standard than the majority of the teams. So they should have to do something special that puts them on an even playing field with the rest of the power conferences. And I think that that's a top 15 rating or one loss or whatever the case may be. I think this is going to be the worst college football playoff ever.
I don't know. It's hard to say because we haven't had a lot of them.
Well, so yes, but hear me out here. Not only is there two teams who are probably going to lose by 35 points in the first round and who do not deserve to be on the same field as Ole Miss or Oregon, but the brackets are also slanted so heavily on one side than the other that all the games on one side are going to be these boring games like Indiana versus Texas Tech. Nobody gives a shit about that game. Indiana versus Oregon may draw a little bit more viewers. And then on like Oklahoma versus Alabama is going to be 13-10 and it's going to be super boring. Whereas the other side, you got Texas A&M in Miami. You got, after the Tulane game, you're going to have either Texas A&M and Ohio State and Ole Miss and Georgia. Then you're going to have Georgia versus Ohio State. And it's like, everybody's going to tune into those games. I can guarantee you on the semifinal, like when the ratings, when you see Texas Tech versus Indiana and its ratings against Georgia versus Ohio State, it's going to be wildly different because nobody cares about those other teams.
The group of fives are just
watering it down even more.
I mean, Indiana versus Texas Tech will get viewership because it is a 6:30 Saturday night game. It'll get viewership. Like it'd be a semifinal game. Semifinal games will get, again, why I say football is different than basketball. Football games will get viewership. Now, if it was James Madison versus Indiana, it won't get as much.
But what about first round Texas versus Oregon? Do you think that would do more ratings than James Madison?
Oh, no, and I agree. Now, I'll also say I don't think ratings should be the be-all, end-all. Like, because, again, if James Madison was undefeated, you know, winning every game big, they're clearly a big-time team, they're ranked in the top 15, then yeah, people would tune in to see that game more.
Sure.
But the fact that nobody really believes that James Madison has a chance, the fact that no one really believes that Tulane has a real shot in these games, it does take it back a little bit, but we can even say Tulane Ole Miss is going to be the least watched game of the first half of the first.
Yeah. Cause Ole Miss already beat them by 35 points this year.
It is, but also Ole Miss is not a traditional, wow, we got to go watch Ole Miss play football team. So I think people will tune in somewhat of the drama, but you know, the same thing, it's not a traditional power, which is why it's so great, you know, that they're in the playoffs right now, but Oregon has been in that fight every year. Alabama, Oklahoma has been there plenty of times. So Indiana only gets theirs. They're the number one team in the country. So they kind of get a pass into maybe people wouldn't be as interested, but now they got a Heisman Trophy winner to sell. There's a few more things to sell in that matchup. We look at that. It does feel like this is a bit anticlimactic. It does feel like this is what we thought the problem would have been if we went to 12. That, guys, we're going to have to put in a lot of teams that maybe don't really have a shot. But look, I'll say this. I didn't think Arizona State-Texas was going to be a great game last year, and it turned out to be way better than it should have been, way better than it had any right to be of a game. So I will put off saying that this is the worst college football playoffs until we get through it. Also, there's only been two with the 12 team. There's, you know, before that, it was the four team, so it was a little bit easier. But I think when we look back at what we're saying with Joel Klatt and what the group of five teams of the original question was, if these games are close, would that help? And that the thought process, if the argument is, hey guys, they might keep it within one score, then we shouldn't have the games. Then we don't need those games. If the argument is maybe they can cover the spreads. The spreads, which, by the way, are 21.5 of Oregon over James Madison and 17.5 for Ole Miss over Tulane. Those are your spreads on that. Your other two spreads, 3.5 and 1.5. More what playoff game spreads should be. So I think it's more about if we're going to look at football and say, let's not make this the NCAA tournament because we don't want to make this a silly show where we're watching it more about which Cinderella could hit, man, which big giant is going to screw up is what we're actually watching for. We don't really care about to Cinderella as much because you forget about them in a couple years. You go, oh, yeah, I remember. Oh, they won that two games. And they're a Cinderella because they won two games. But really, you're like, hey, remember when this really good team lost? Remember when the big bastard got knocked down? That's what people want to see more. And I just don't think we need that in college football. That's what the regular season is for. Like, that's what non-conference is for, is to watch, hey, can you go unseat? USF, when they had the run early in the season, that was a lot of fun. Even though the two teams they beat turned out to not be anybody, it was still really fun to watch that in non-conference, right? And I think that's the place for that. And so for some of these group of five teams, like, go try and get the bigger matchups. Try and play some of these. And maybe no one's going to play you anymore because strength of schedule doesn't matter and they don't want to get beat. But go play as big a team as you can find. If you want to be a national champion, go pick a fight with the biggest dog in the yard. And if you don't, and I know it's hard to pick that years out, I know it's hard to do all these things last minute, but if you're not willing to go take those fights, then it's the same thing as me watching Jake Paul and pretending he's a great boxer. I don't believe it until he fights champions. And you guys aren't playing champions, so I don't know what you are. You're not playing guys that are playing at the top of their level, at the top of the game. And so I this one's really over the top because the ACC was so screwed up that it ends up that you do get an ACC team in, but not the ACC champion. And that's weird and silly too, that Miami should have counted as ACC rep. Should have just gone, hey, we're changing the rules. Miami counts as ACC rep. We're putting another at-large bid in.
That would have made much more sense.
Duke was so bad that we don't care that you won. We're giving the ACC a bid. Guys, this is unfair and silly anyway, but we're putting Miami in. And then you still could have put in a Notre Dame, a BYU, a Texas, a Vanderbilt, and everyone would have been happier with any one of those teams. Like even a BYU that does not belong in and shouldn't be in there, that didn't play anybody else and feels like a group of five team, that they would have been better than putting in Tulane.
Look, here's what the group of five should do.
James Madison, actually.
Here's what the group of five should do. If you're a team who believes that you have a chance to make a college football playoff and be one of the top group of five teams in the country, you have to go out and you have to schedule multiple power four opponents in your non-conference schedule. Yeah. And you have to at least win a couple of those games or win those games.
Yeah.
Like USF did this year. They scheduled Miami, they scheduled Florida, and I think there was another one in there too.
Florida State, right?
Yeah, Florida State. Or something like that.
Because they beat Florida State.
Let me look at their schedule.
I thought they beat Florida and beat Florida State, but lost to Miami. Does that sound right?
They played Boise State, Florida, and Miami.
Okay, not Florida State.
And Boise State's fine because they were a top 25 team. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with that. It's still a good group of five team. But you win that game by 27 points. Then you beat Florida at the Swamp.
Yeah.
Okay? And then you go and you get beat by Miami. Like, that's the kind of schedule that I want to see out of a group of five team that is going to have a chance at a college football playoff. Not, you know, North Texas, who played Lamar, Western Michigan, Army, and Washington State, and South Alabama, and UTSA, Charlotte, Navy. And then they get beat by two scores by Tulane, who, to Tulane's credit, did play Ole Miss early in the season, and they played Northwestern. And they played Duke, and they won all three of those games. Those are at least power five teams that they played against. But a James Madison who doesn't play anybody and schedules one power four team and gets beat by two scores has no business being in the field.
No, they don't. They don't. It's frustrating. I agree with Joel Klatt, though. I thought it was interesting because we did see a lot of people online really fighting in that chance of you guys are just trying to keep us out. But look at this. The biggest argument was that you kept seeing was, what about these games that were upsets? And I agree. Yeah. If that team's ranked high enough, and not that I'm fine with giving them an automatic qualifier. If they're in the top 20, I'm fine about it. because, again, and really top 15 would be, we know you're good enough, but I'll go even with the bias because top 15 is what it should be. I'll give you five more spots because of big by power four buyers bias that you're going to say there's a bias and that's why we can't get in the top 15. So we'll say, okay, top 20, which means you have to be undefeated, which means you have to be winning games well. You have to get on everybody's radar, and then you will move up in that rankings. We have no problem putting you in there and letting you fight with the big dogs then because you earned it. But you don't just get it for free because you happen to be the best of the worst. Doesn't mean anything.
No, it doesn't.
No, you're no better than the Big Ten asking for automatic qualifiers when you're like, guys, you ain't got that many teams.
Yeah,
I don't know if you have enough of these teams.
At the end of the day, there should have only been two group of five teams who were considered for the college football playoff, and it was USF and it was Tulane. Tulane won the games they needed to win to get in. Yeah. USF didn't, and that was the deciding factor. None of the other teams should have been in there.
Matt, also wanted to get into a little bit of a couple other Texas players in the news that came out yesterday, I think more than today, yesterday. But first off, we saw DeAndre Moore. Looks like he will be going to the NFL draft. When I first saw the news that he was not returning, I was like, okay. It's not saying he's going to the portal, though. And it doesn't really feel like he is going to be a draft pick where he wanted to be. But at the same point, I guess he does not want to go somewhere else. He doesn't want to go try and learn a new system. He doesn't want to go try and, you know, and maybe he just like, he's like, look, I like being at Texas. I don't necessarily want to leave Texas, but I'm ready to move on to the next thing. You mentioned this a little bit before when we talked about players who made into the portal that you thought DeAndre Moore was maybe a little bit more on the edge of leaving because of what's coming up in the future, because of what players are in the system right now, that maybe he'd be a little bit more inclined to leave.
Yeah, it's not wholly surprising to me. I mean, it's definitely not as shocking as like Leongo Lafau. Did I expect him to go pro? I mean, at the beginning of the season, there was people talking about him as a potential,
yes,
you know, late first round, very worst day two pick. And I think that he's probably not in the first round conversation anymore because he struggled a little bit this year in terms of drops, and he had that injury that kept him out for a little bit and all these different things. But I think that the NFL skill level is still there. So, I mean, yeah, go take your shot at the pros. If you don't want to transfer somewhere, if you're a Longhorn through and through and you're like, look, I know that my playing time is probably going to get eaten into next year, and that's probably going to end up hurting my draft stock, but I don't want to go play for somebody else. And I know that I'm going to play in the NFL one day. Then, like, yeah, go take your shot. Be a third or fourth round draft pick and go make a roster. I mean, the thing about wide receiver is you can get drafted anywhere between the first round to the sixth round or the seventh round. And if you perform well in training camp and you perform well in practice, you can find your way into a rotation and find your way onto a roster. And he has a skill set of, you know, being a slot receiver who's hard to bring down and who's quick and, you know, despite some drop issues this year, has pretty good hands and all the things that you need to succeed at the next level. He's a tough guy. He works really hard. So I think he's going to be somebody who surprises at the NFL level. So I'm not totally surprised that he moved on. I mean, I had a graphic created for our Longhorns on SI Instagram account of him leaving the program like 3 weeks ago. So, you know, I wish him the best. I would have liked for him to come back, sure, but it kind of opens things up for the younger players now, and I think it's going to be best for all parties involved.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's unfortunate because of what he can bring to the program and was such a good, you know, culture guy in the system and in the program. It does feel a little bit like going into this season, there were some injuries, and he just kind of missed the boat a little bit of being really the guy, like offensively, of kind of being more of that leader on the offense. It feels like maybe he missed that boat a little bit. And so when he came back, it was still a really big impact. He still did a lot of great things for Texas, but maybe those early games, there was just a difference of, like, we kept thinking too, DeAndre Moore was going to be Arch's guy. you know, that was kind of the thought for a couple of years was, oh, okay, well, DeAndre's already getting playing time, but when Arch comes up, that's going to be his dude. And that did not materialize either because of the offseason work, because of the issues with the offensive line. It never really materialized. And then, you know, with Emmett Moseley coming in, that kind of put it to where maybe I can play Emmett Moseley instead of Moore at certain times, where Moore was so valuable a year ago that he had to be on the field the whole time, even if he wasn't catching passes, because he was such a good downfield blocker, because he could do so many of these other little pieces for Texas. And then you brought in Moseley, and he starts to be able to do some of those too, that maybe you see a little bit more of the writing on the wall for DeAndre Moore to say, all right, I get it. There's, you know, if they don't need me in for 85% of the snaps, then I don't need to be here anymore. I'm ready to move on to the next thing, because they're ready to move on. They're ready to do their thing. And I'm not, it's not going to help my draft stock anymore to be a year older and not where I need to be. I'm going to go learn the defense. Let me go learn an NFL offense. Let me go learn what we're doing, find a place where I can really thrive in. And it may take me a year to really be playing. But even if I'm an undrafted free agent or a late sixth, seventh round pick, I'll still get in. I'll definitely have a job. And then I can work my way into it, because he is still better with more upside than a lot of guys that are wide receivers on NFL rosters right now.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think that it's a totally different situation from Leongo LaFau either. I think that the young guys behind him were going to eat into more and more of his snaps, just like LaFau, and that was going to create a situation where he wasn't on the field as much, which was going to create a situation where his draft stock next year, even if he played well, since he was on the field a lot less, was going to drop a little bit. And with LaFau, he wants to go raise his draft stock a little bit, so he's going to transfer, whereas Moore is just like, I'm ready. I'll go. And, I mean, like, if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, do I want DeAndre Moore on my roster, or do I want Ryan Flournoy? I think I'll take my chances with DeAndre Moore.
Yeah. No, and I, like, I can tell you, I think he's a perfect guy for the Longhorn Broncos. It starts there, like that type of guy that you love. He's always been willing to block downfield. He's always been willing to do the special things. He'll be on special teams as well. He'll do everything. He comes from one of his mentors early on was Jordan Whittington, who we know is beloved in LA, and Sean McVay loves Jordan Whittington. So you feel like he can kind of fit into that mold a little bit, of a guy that coaches will absolutely love having on their team. So a little surprising to see him go to the NFL. I probably thought maybe it was 50-50, but Matt had said it earlier on the show, and you know, that it wouldn't be surprising if he left. And so that one wasn't shocking. One that would have been extremely surprising if he left, and not surprising that he stayed, Arch Manning. The reports come out that he's staying for another year. Which, look, I get it's in 2020, 2025, 2026, when everything's happening now, you can't just not go if you're a star name. If you're a top-level player, it's harder to just go, okay, I'm just doing what everybody else to do and just keep playing, and then I'll go on with it. You have to say, I'm not going to the NFL. You have to say, I'm not hitting the transfer portal. You have to say those things now, or else everybody freaks out. So he had to say it. It's not shocking. It is something that me and you have beaten the drum on over and over and over again, that this would be happening. So I would have been wildly shocked if something changed, because everything we've heard out of their camp has been this from day one, and they've stuck with the plan. I didn't expect him to break it. He improved greatly over the season. If he had not improved, you could have seen a lot of these things happen, because he would have gone, well, Sark's clearly not making him a better quarterback. But he's a better quarterback right now than he was week one. So a goal accomplished on that, of being better than day one. So no surprises there for Arch Manning coming back. But it is really good news that you also want to set in stone before the transfer portal. That we do have a quarterback. And although some of them may disagree that he is – you know, a washed, horrible, big bust quarterback, because, again, they watch one game at the beginning of the season, Denver watch another one. he is going to help you in being able to pull in a recruiting, a transfer portal class that you're looking to make a real impact with this year.
Well, not only did he improve throughout the season, but according to PFF, he's the third best quarterback in the SEC.
Yeah.
Better than Ty Simpson, better than Gunnar Stockton, better than John Mateer, better than Marcel Reed. You can go on down the list. The only quarterbacks that had a better PFF grade for the season than him were Diego Pavia and Joey Aguilar. I mean, this is the most unsurprising thing that we heard, that we've heard so far since the end of the regular season, for sure. I think we were beating the drum in like June that no, he's not leaving. He's going to stay for another year. And there's multiple reasons for that. One of, you know, the least of which is this has always been the Manning plan to play for two full college seasons before you head to the NFL. But also there is a real, you know, discernible difference in success at the NFL level in terms of how many, you know, reps and games that you have played in at the college level before you go pro. Really good examples of ones where that did not work out so well were Trey Lance, Anthony Richardson, Mac Jones. And then really good examples of that are, you know, a Matthew Stafford or one of these other players who played two or three full seasons with their team and got the reps against, you know, really good college defenses, and it prepared them for the NFL level. But yeah, I mean, this was always the plan. The unfortunate thing about it is like, and I don't think a lot of people understand this about the media either. News is news, right? Especially in today's day and age. Like, we just saw earlier today, Jordan Maiava from USC is like sitting there signing a new contract with USC to play, and USC's announcing it on Twitter. It's like, was he ever going to leave? No, but it's news because that's the state of the day, the state of college football that we're in. But also, if something happens, and I got a lot of flack for this on Twitter by posting a story about Arch Manning coming back. It's like, well, when something is announced or reported, it is our job to get the story out there. So it's my job to report that story. And that's why it's a story, because it's a story. And whether or not it's a shock or awe or really truly breaking news or not doesn't matter. It still has to be put out there. And I think that Texas appreciates that it gets put out there, to be quite honest, because it quells a lot of discussions, you know, with recruits and other players who are thinking about entering the transfer portal and potentially looking at Texas like, oh yeah, Arch is going to be there. Now I can really consider them as a place that I want to go.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. Yeah. It's that's not news. Like, but it is to somebody somewhere it is. So we have to put it out there. It is what it is. So Matt, that takes us to the transfer portal. And
got a lot of names for you, Patrick.
Looking at a few names that we want to, you know, kind of look at of people that Texas may need, because look, now we know that linebacker core, we did our list. The linebacker core is now bigger. The secondary is still a lot on that defense. Your defensive line is not your main piece, but the rest of that defense is going to need a lot of help to keep you in pace to try and be a national championship contender. As you hope your offense grows a little bit, the offensive line is going to need some help. You know, you're probably looking at the wide receiver room now. If you're trying to be really aggressive, you want to bring in extra pieces to help you be the best team you can be. When you see everyone else loading up around you, you have to continue to load up yourself. I know they want to do a lot of it in-house. It may feel like this season they got to go a little bit more. So, Matt, what are some of the names that people should keep an eye out for? Keep in mind, we're still half a month away from the portal even opening. So there's still a lot more names, a lot of names of people that are going to play in bowl games and then announce. There's still names of people in the playoffs currently that will be out of the playoffs and announce. And there's a lot of people just like Texas probably has another 5 to 10 guys at least that will announce before the portal opens. And then where you'll get a couple that happened during it with tampering and everything else. but we still have several more players that are going to enter the portal. So very incomplete list, but a good start here as we're seeing more and more names start to jump in.
Well, I kind of want to figure out where you want me to start here.
Okay.
Is there a particular position or...
Let's just start on the offense.
I got like 15 or 20 names for you.
Okay, let's start on the offense because it'll be a little bit less on the offense, but we'll start there and kind of give me the top offensive players. Well, less of like, we have to replace a lot of stuff. So we have to replace offensive line. We're going to aim at running back. We're going to aim at wide receiver. But I don't know if it's as much of like, oh, we really need to hit at linebacker. We really need to hit at DB or else there's nothing working. You know, if you didn't get a running back, if you didn't get a wide receiver, your offense would still be okay. You need linemen for sure, but you want to make yourself in a better position. So let's start on offense and start with some of those skill positions first.
All right, let's start with the skill positions. I think the guy that I have my eyes on the most in terms of skill position players, the first one that's already in the portal is Nick Marsh, the wide receiver out of Michigan State. He's a sophomore. He's from Detroit. He had 59 catches for 662 yards and 6 touchdowns. He is kind of the exact mold for Texas that they need to bring in a wide receiver, like kind of a big body guy who can run and who's got really good hands and can be a game breaker. Is he Cam Coleman? No, but he's a really, really talented player, and he can make a huge impact on your team next year, especially with DeAndre Moore out, because you're probably going to move him Mosley to the slot, and then that allows you to have an experienced guy on the outside opposite of Ryan Wingo. That's got one guy that I'm looking at really heavily in terms of guys who technically haven't entered the portal yet, but there is increasing reasons for them to enter the portal. I think obviously Jaden Ball is one that everybody has their eyes on as a running back.
Did Jaden Ball wipe his social media Florida stuff the other day? Did I see that?
Yeah, but then he did. But then he also did like a post with Florida. What do you call that on Instagram? Like a collab post or whatever with Florida on Instagram that day. I don't know. What I do know is that Florida is negotiating for him to stay, and that more than likely Texas is going to have something to say about it, whether or not it's whatever. You know what I mean? I think Texas is going to be involved there. And if Florida ends up hiring Chad Scott, who they interviewed for their running back coach position, then I think that that gives Texas a leg up in that conversation, because it's like, well, you know, I know Jabbar Jalouk really well. Unless they bring in a home run hire at the running back coach position, then I think that they're going to have a chance. Cam Coleman, obviously another guy. I don't know if he's going to leave or not. They've had about 4 wide receivers go into the portal.
Yeah.
I think that they're probably going to do everything they can to keep Cam Coleman. So that would be another name to watch there. And other skill position players, there's a bunch of them out there.
Yeah.
If I'm looking at Michigan, who hasn't really had a lot of players enter the portal yet, but very well could, based on what happens with the Sherrone Moore situation. Andrew Marsh, the wide receiver there, he's from Texas. He's from Katy. Texas had interest in him when he was being recruited. He had 42 catches for 641 yards and 3 touchdowns last year. Extremely fast, you know, game-breaking type player. And then their running back, Justice Haynes, is another running back that I would be very interested in if I was Texas, should he enter the portal. He had 857 yards and 10 scores on 121 rushes. And then one other guy that, I mean, I don't know if you consider tight ends skill position players or not, here. But depending on what happens with Jack Endries.
Yeah.
Brody Foley out of Tulsa is a name that I would keep my eye on. He's got 37 catches for 528 yards and 7 touchdowns this year. He also ran the ball 5 times for 12 yards and 2 scores. So he's kind of a do-it-all tight end for them. That would be another name that is really interesting to me if I'm Texas.
All right. So let's look at that offensive line then, Matt. So if we say we got some interesting names out there, and I agree, Victor, that Cam Coleman would be a ton of fun to see. But again, that one is, if he hits in, that money is going to be a lot. So you're going to have to find a specific donor who is like, I want Cam Coleman, and here is the millions of dollars to make it happen.
Yeah.
So,
well, I know did forget. Teams,
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I did forget one player who, at running back, who I would really like to see Texas go after if he does indeed end up going to the portal. It's Caleb Hawkins. He's a true freshman out of North Texas. He had 200 carries for 1,236 yards, averaged 6.2 yards per carry, and had 23 touchdowns this past year. He's one of the best running backs in the country. And with Drew Mestemaker now likely to enter the portal, it would seem likely that their top running back would also enter the portal. And I think that if he does, Texas would be extremely interested in him.
All right, let's look at the offensive line, where this is a big one that we know they are spending money in and going after. Sark has said they are going after offensive linemen in the portal. This is the least shocking thing that they will be going after in the portal, but so are a lot of other teams. Matt, what linemen have you seen jump in so far?
Well, okay, so I want to preface this by saying some of these names aren't going to sound extremely exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's offensive line. It's hard.
Right, but based on what they have done at their respective schools and their body types and their skill sets, I would be really interested in them. The first one to me is Texas State interior offensive lineman Telek Lockett. Texas, I know for a fact, is interested in him based on reports that I've seen. And he's 6'3", 327 pounds. He's first team all Sun Belt. He allowed one sack in 29 games. Really, really good player. Another one, South Alabama interior offensive lineman Kenton Jurito. He is 6'3", 330 pounds. He's allowed one sack in 1,472 career snaps. Big guy that can play anywhere on the interior. UCF center Carter Miller, 6'2", 300 pounds. Played almost 2,000 career snaps and has allowed just two sacks. He is a guy that I think, you know, if you're talking about a guy who can come in and compete for the center position right away and would fit in seamlessly with what Texas likes to do offensively in terms of running the football and all the different things they like to do, I think he would be a great fit. And then Mercer center Gavin Marks. Started 10 games as a true freshman, did not allow a single sack, was an FCS freshman All-American. He is an extremely good player. He's going to be somebody that, you know, is going to be very highly coveted. DeAndre Carter out of Auburn. This is a guy that has visited Texas before. He's 6'3.5", 355 pounds. He thrives on the interior as like a power, you know, power running type, you know, offensive line blocker. He's great in short yardage and blocking on the interior. He comes out of Mater Dei in California, which is a place that Texas has done very well recruiting and that they're very familiar with. And when he visited Texas, this was back in 2023, I believe. He said, "I liked it a lot. I'll be honest, I didn't know much about Texas until today, but I met all the coaches. First time meeting the head coach and the offensive line coach. I like them a lot and what they did for the program. I like what they see of my, or they like what they see of my film, and they want me to come here and join them and be a part of what they're building, which is ultimately a national championship." So he knows what Texas is about. He's familiar with everybody. That would be one that I would be really interested in too.
Okay.
And then where did that one go? Josh Atkins out of Arizona State. 6'4", 290 pounds. He's from Mansfield, Timberview, which is in Arlington. He's a guy that's, you know, state of Texas guy, you know, DFW based. He's worked with the same trainer as DJ Campbell and Andre Kojo. So that's, you know, there's some familiarity there as well. And then where's that other one? I have so many names. Favor Edwin out of Auburn, 6'8", 290 pound offensive tackle. He's from the state of Georgia. He's got the length and the upside that the Texas really likes, and he's great in pass protection. So, like, you know, maybe offensive tackle won't be the position that they go after very heavily in the portal. I think it would be more of the interior guys that I talked about. And yeah, Victor, that's a really good point as well. Malachi Lee is very heavily considering getting out of his NLI with Michigan because of the head coaching change. And he was a guy that Texas was really heavily in on going into early signing day. And should he become available again, I think that Texas would be a very, very heavy player in landing him. And he is a massive, massive human being, and he's extremely athletic. He's out of Hawaii. He's 6'6", 318 pounds. He had offers from Michigan, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, Arizona. 85-inch wingspan, 36-inch arms, 85-inch wingspan. He moves really well. He's got great feet. He's got great balance. He could play left or right tackle, and this is a guy that could project for a really long time with your team too. He'll be here 3-4 years and be a really good player for you. So those are all guys that are really, really interesting to me, I should say.
I like it. I like it. Let's look on the defensive end of the ball, Matt. Do you have any defensive linemen, or are you just looking at linebackers and secondary?
I'm pretty much just looking at linebackers and secondary for the most part. But Jaheim Otis, who's a former Alabama player who transferred to Colorado, just entered the portal again. He was one of their better interior defensive linemen this past season. You talk about. I don't know if anybody can hear my dogs barking, but apologies. You talk about the giant space eaters that Texas is looking for in there to replace like a Cole Brevard or a Travis Shaw or something like that. He's 6'5", 370 pounds. And, you know, when he was coming out, he had offers from Alabama, Ole Miss, Georgia, LSU, Arkansas. He was the number two player in the state of Mississippi and a really, really good, really, really good interior guy. And then Javian Hilson just entered the portal out of Missouri. He was a guy that was Texas was really in on at the end of his recruitment, and then he ended up going to Missouri, but they could potentially be on him as well, depending on what they feel their needs are at the edge.
All right. Let's look at that. Let's go to the secondary next. Then we'll head out to the secondary, and, you know, we could use some help at safety. Definitely could use some help at DB. Who's out there right now that you like, Matt, at the secondary for Texas, maybe to go target early on, maybe do some scouting and see if they could find these guys and they like what they can do.
Well, there's a couple of names out there. One of the more obvious ones is Khalil Barnes out of Clemson. He's been a starter for them for quite some time. This past year, he finished with 40 total tackles and two pass breakups. He's a really good player, and he's going to be one of the most highly coveted defensive backs in the portal. Cincinnati safety Christian Harrison is another one. He's the son of Rodney Harrison, and he's coming off a career year at Cincinnati, 66 tackles, 40 solos, 7 pass breakups, and a pick. He had 10 tackles, a pass breakup, and a pick in their loss to Utah this past year. So that's another one. And then a couple more guys have entered the portal recently as well. At defensive back, Jordan Castell from Florida. He has 168 career tackles and 3 interceptions. Florida State defensive back Jabril Rawls is entering the portal as well. He's 6'1", 185 pounds, 58 tackles, 3 passes defended, and an interception. He'll have 2 years of eligibility, and he was arguably Florida State's best defensive player this year. So that's one that is really interesting to me as well. And then there's a couple of linebackers as well that that have caught my eye. I lost my place. So give me one sec here. This is what happens when you got like 25 names on your list, Patrick. You get a little bit confused. Boo Carter is another defensive back that I would be interested in as well. Tennessee, he's one of their best defensive players. He'd be able to come in and start immediately and play in the same position as Michael Taff. but linebacker Kamori House out of North Carolina. He was one of the best linebackers in the ACC this year. He had 78 total tackles, a sack, and a pick. And he's just a sophomore, so he'll have a couple of years of eligibility left. So he's one that is, I think, particularly interesting to me. Let me see where he's from real quick. He is from St. John Bosco in Bellflower, California, which is, I believe, where DeAndre Moore is from as well. Texas obviously has their connections there in California.
I know he visited Texas too.
Mm-hmm, he did. That's a good shout. He did visit Texas. Matai, I'm going to butcher this name. Apologies, guys. Matai Tagawai out of USC. He's from San Clemente, California. He was a guy that was, you know, interested in Texas when he was going through the process. He's a freshman at USC. He could be a good guy that you could develop for a long time. One of the other ones that I was interested in, but I think that he's probably, if he ends up going somewhere, it might be Texas A&M, just because they just hired his linebacker coach and defensive coordinator from Arkansas. But Tavian Wallace, former four-star recruit. He's also just a freshman. He's from the state of Georgia. Really talented player there. So, I mean, there's a bunch of different directions you could go in at the linebacker position. It's not as deep right now, I think, as, you know, maybe the defensive back or the offensive line category, but there's some better players that are jumping in every day.
And that's kind of where we're at, is that every day you're going to keep getting more and more good players into the portal. We'll have to keep doing this as we get closer. We keep seeing more names pop into it and seeing where Texas is with their transfers and what, you know, what space is opened up, you know. And this again falls into the conversation I want to have with you a little bit more tomorrow about what other teams are going to be going heavy after transfers, and where, you know, where is it worth getting into budget issues and, you know, willing to spend more. Because biggest thing we got to remember, Matt, everyone in the SEC just got 20 more roster spots.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you had everything set with, you were allowing some spots and guys are transferring out, so you know you got some room coming in and out, everyone just got 20 more, which means you can really hit hard in that transfer portal for a lot of teams. We'll get more into that there. Appreciate you giving me this list so far. As we continue on, Matt, when we have those, we'll continue to have you update your list of people that you like to have, you like Texas to make the phone call, like their scouting department to be putting together film for Sark and the guys for who they should be looking at. And Victor, at this point, probably now with the added 20 roster spots, you can probably get to three now of linebackers you bring in.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're always trying to weigh that in the middle of culture versus, you know, bringing in too many people in the transfer portal. But I think you could see two more veteran linebackers at this point and then one younger guy. So bring in somebody that you still like that has some eligibility left and try and bring them in and assimilate them to the culture a little bit more than the guys you're bringing in that are 1 or 2 year, you know, rental kind of guys that you're just getting for that last year for the trying to win the national championship. But I think you can move probably up to three now if you really wanted to, but you're definitely at least at two, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine two is the low end. Three would be my preference. Had LaFau not left, you could probably say two is the max, but
yeah.
One of my favorite linebackers that I thought could have an opportunity to enter the portal, elected to stay at Florida. That was Miles Graham. Really, really wanted that one to hit the portal, but unfortunately he will not be.
What a jerk. All right, Matt, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll get into our overreactions here on the show as we do every Tuesday. If anybody else has any overreactions they want to throw into the chat on the text line, go ahead and throw those in. We'll react to yours as well as the ones I throw at Matt. When we come back here in 2.5 minutes, right here on Open Gym on Texas Sports Unfiltered.
Hi, this is Tom McKay, owner of Audiovisual Consultations, and all of us at Audiovisual would like to wish you and your family a happy holiday season. This time of year can get a little hectic, so we want to remind you to relax, enjoy the season with your family and friends, and give us a call at 512-255-8678 for all of your home entertainment needs. This is my favorite time of the year. I love the holidays, the music, the decorations, the presents, the whole darn thing. So this year I'm asking all you listeners to help make this a special holiday for everyone. Smiles are contagious and free, so let's give them away like the government gives away your money. Let's high-five strangers on the street, hold the door for people behind us, tip your servers more than they've ever been tipped before, give to a charity, or hell, give to a bunch of charities. If someone does a good job, tell them they did a good job. Pat someone on the butt. Sing in public places just because it feels good. And as always, hug your kids until they beg you to stop. Watch some games with your friends and make love to your wife or your husband. I know there's some women listening too. You can still give us a call at 512-255-8678 if you'd like to get some cool electronics, but more importantly, have a great holiday season and a fucking awesome next year.
You see COBRA everywhere. It's that personal level of just feeling like it's a personal family interaction.
The customer service, it's impeccable. It's unlike anything I've ever experienced buying a car.
Over the 30 years that I've been buying cars from them, I feel like I know them and they know me.
COBRA's done an amazing job of making me feel valued. If you purchase a vehicle and you want to feel like you're part of a family, join the COBRA family.
Come and experience it for yourself.
COBRA, born and raised in Austin.
BK here for Olipop. Man, this stuff is the game changer of all game changers. Their slogan is a new kind of soda, and that's exactly what it is. You get that same great soda taste, but Olipop is actually good for you. Inside of every can, a blend of 7 unique botanicals, plant fibers, and prebiotics. You're getting 9 grams of fiber in every can, only 2 to 5 grams of sugar, and man, the flavor is absolutely there. Classic soda flavors like cola, root beer, lemon lime, and Dr. Goodwin. That's their version of a Dr. Pepper. And some other great flavors as well. The grape, the cream soda, the cherry cola. It's all fantastic. I'm telling y'all, Olipop tastes just like the soda you grew up sipping, but with the added benefits of microbiome and digestive health support as well. Pick up Olipop at HEB, Target, Walmart, Whole Foods, and Costco all throughout the Austin area and the state of Texas. And head over to drinkolipop.com. Use the promo code TEXAS20 for a discount on your first purchase. It's Olipop, a new kind of soda.